everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's August 2025, and this is episode 459, which is a conversation about the latest book from John Walton in his Lost World series. This book is called New Explorations in the Lost World of Genesis, Advances in the Origins Debate. Today's guest is Dr. John Bloom, who is a professor of physics at Biola University in Los Angeles, California. John has published numerous articles on the relation of science and faith. Dr. Bloom has written a summary critique book review for the Christian Research Journal, and his review is called The Graveyard Spiral of Walton's New Explorations in the Lost World of Genesis, and you can read it for free at equip.org. That's EQUIP.org. John, it's good to welcome you on the podcast.
Well, it's great to be here.
I'm excited today to welcome John Bloom onto the podcast. He has written for us a few times over the years, and it's great to have him as a first-time guest for this episode. And he has written for us in the past about this series of book, the Lost World series, and those books, and that series is written by Dr. John Walton. And the particular book that we are going to be discussing today is the newest one in that Lost World series. It's called New Explorations in the Lost World of Genesis, Advances in the Origins Debate. But before we talk about the book, I would like to ask John a little bit more about John Walton. Who is John Walton?
Well, he's one of the more famous Old Testament scholars in the evangelical world today. He graduated from Hebrew Union College with a PhD in ancient Near Eastern studies. Parallel background to me, I did ancient Near Eastern studies at the Annenberg Research Institute in Philadelphia. Then he went on to the Moody Bible Institute teaching Old Testament, then shifted over to Wheaton College, where he's probably best known there for many years. He's now emeritus. He's retired. He's been on the board. I would assume he's still on the board of the BioLogos Institute. So he has connections into that whole theistic evolution, evolutionary creation view, and is one of their key theologians in terms of looking at that perspective.
So you have reviewed for us another book that is in a series of books that he's done. And before we talk about this book in particular, I want to ask you, why does this topic matter to the average Christian? Before, I don't want anyone to turn off this podcast and think, oh, that sounds too esoteric for me. I want to know, why should Christians care about origins and faith in the Bible?
Well, Walton's main thesis throughout his whole Lost World series, there's about 8 books he's done on this, is that, you know, Christians have misunderstood the Bible for thousands of years. You know, now that we have some understanding from the ancient Near East, we've recovered these cuneiform texts and understood their stories. We now, he says, you know, that we now realize that we've misunderstood Genesis and, you know, much of the Old Testament because we have not been interpreting it through the, you know, ancient Near Eastern eyes. So in this situation where he focuses in this New Explorations book, the latest one he's done, is looking at the overall creation, fall, redemption, consummation aspect of Christian theology, right? You know, God created an initially good creation, placed Adam and Eve in the garden, but then they rebelled. There was the fall. And then the whole rest of the Bible is focused on God's redemptive plan to bring us back into relationship with Him, with the final looking forward to a restoration, if you will, a new heavens and a new earth where we'll be together with God forever. So this creation, fall, redemption, consummation story, Walton says, well, we just got that wrong. Okay. There never was a fall per se. He even goes so far to say that the whole early Genesis 1 to 11 just is not historical. I quote him here. He says, I view Genesis 1 to 11 as offering vignettes to explore the human search for order, not as the story of human history. So that's a major change from, again, how conservative Christians have historically and traditionally understand the whole theme of the Bible. So does it matter? Yeah, it's, you know, do we have the basic picture right about the whole story of redemption? One of the things he also mentions is that there probably was not a real Adam and Eve. He's not insistent on that, but that's his overall tone. You know, well, whether or not they existed, you know, doesn't really matter. So it's a very sort of pro-evolutionary model that he's espousing here, and just a complete reshaping of how we understand, have traditionally understood the Bible message.
Well, now I want to get into asking John about this book that he's reviewed, which he noted is called New Explorations in the Lost World of Genesis, Advances in the Origins Debate, which is a very provocative title. I want to ask you what those advances in the origins debate, according to John Walton, are. But I want to have you expand on what you were just saying about the gospel, because creation, fall, redemption, consummation is like, that's the gospel in a nutshell. And it's very curious to me that somebody who was a professor at an evangelical university is now saying what we know as Christian orthodoxy, in other words, Adam and Eve were real historical people that existed. There was a tree. They did eat condemnation unto themselves after they took the fruit that they were forbidden to take. And there was an actual fall. I just want to ask you a little bit more about not only how he interprets away from the fall or why he would do that. Why would he move away from established Christian orthodoxy?
Yeah, I kind of wonder that myself. I think his goal is, again, focusing on, I see this thread throughout his Genesis, you know, Lost World of Genesis 1, Lost World of Adam and Eve, to try to distance the Bible from any science or scientific interpretations as we might understand it. So his strategy here in New Explorations, though, is to set up that divide, if you will, by doing away with the fall. And his method is kind of interesting, I find. He first argues that, the term, the fall, does not occur in the Bible. That's a term that, you know, theologians use later. But wait, the term, the Trinity, does not occur in the Bible either. And yet, you know, that's something Christians would accept to be true. So the fact that the term doesn't occur in the Bible itself isn't a big deal. But his way of working around the fall is to say that, you know, early Genesis is all about humans seeking order in all the wrong places. And by order, he means social and political order, that people are looking for order and not able to find it in the garden or in, you know, trying to be like God or in agriculture or in civilization. So he's really fixated on human seeking order is what's going on there in early Genesis. And there's a certain truth to that. People really like to have their ducks in a row, you know, not to live in chaotic conditions and so on. But I think there's a lot more going on in Genesis than just that. And it's interesting to see some of the interpretations that he brings in to try to work around or avoid the idea of a fall. One of the things that really struck me was that he says, look, naked and unashamed, you know, Adam and Eve were naked and unashamed. What that really means is that they were uncivilized, you know, they were indecent being naked, and they were shameless about it. And it's like, wow, that's really interesting, because that term is used, naked and unashamed, in the context of a marriage, where, or those are kind of desirable states in a marriage. So again, he kind of warps that kind of normal interpretation that naked and unashamed is a good thing in again, the marriage context. Then he says, well, you know, the initial creation was not really, the garden was not really a very good state like Christians have assumed. And then what really blew me away is he says, look, being like God was okay for them. And it's like, well, wait, in the context of the passage, they're cursed for wanting to be like God, right? So, you know, eating the fruit and God's upset with it. So again, just a completely opposite interpretation that he's putting into the text in order to avoid this idea of a fall. And then he says, look, you know, people were never comfortable in the garden. For Walton, the garden is the divine realm that humans are in. And people just aren't comfortable in the divine realm. And again, in the context, we have Adam created, and then he's having a good time naming the animals with God. God creates Eve, a wife for him. They look like they're really happy. They're walking with God in the cool of the evening. That certainly sounds like a really great life that they have, and what we would call the pre-fall conditions. And again, Walton just, you know, totally glosses that over and says, well, they were never comfortable in the garden. And it's like, well, yes, after they rebelled, they weren't terribly comfortable, but beforehand, it looks like that was a very good state to be in. And what really scares me with Walton's interpretation here, people are not comfortable in the divine realm, is, well, wait a second, what about heaven? And what about the new heavens and the new earth when we're going to dwell with God and God's going to dwell with us? And all the promises in the Old Testament of, you know, he'll be his people, he'll dwell with Israel, and so on. So this whole notion of, oh, people are not comfortable being around God, where does that come from? Well, it comes from the ancient Near East. So, you know, all, what would one say? There's a lot of half-truths in arguments sometimes. But if you look at, you know, documents from around the ancient Near East that talk about the early history of people, there's no fall accounts in any other ancient Near Eastern documents outside the Bible, certainly not any clear ones. And the uncivilized state was the first description of people that's given. The gods send kingship down from heaven to establish order. So there is a desire for order that, again, is common to everyone. But this idea that people aren't comfortable in the divine realm, well, in the ancient Near East, the gods were, we would call them demons, right? These false gods. And so you're not comfortable around divine beings like that. And if you're sinful, then if you're around any good god, you're not comfortable either. So yes, there's some elements of truth that you know, Walton can bring up and say, but to apply them here in, you know, Genesis 2 and 3 before the fall and say, well, they were never comfortable in the garden when the text is clearly implying that they were, seems to be, again, just this creative reinterpretation of the text. It reminds me actually of when I was in seminary. You know, we did some exegesis classes, Bible interpretation classes, and we'd look at a text, and I know I came up with some creative interpretations, and, you know, I'd bring it up in class, and the professor would go, you know, that's really interesting, But that was identified as a heresy back in the 12th century, you know, or somebody thought of that, you know, again, a millennia ago or something like that. So creative interpretations are a lot of fun, but are they right is the question. And I think Walton seriously erred in bringing in these ancient Near Eastern so-called parallels that were the biblical picture, the biblical worldview is exactly the opposite of that.
This is a big thank you to all of our faithful listeners of the Postmodern Realities podcast. And if you are newer to the podcast in the last 2 years, you will have seen that our journal transitioned to an online-only, free, no-subscription publication at equip.org. But every now and then, we want to bring to you some very important primary research that we do in a special print issue. And we've done that with our very special print issue of Volume 48, Numbers 2 and 3, which is called The Eastern Lightning Cult, Christ Returns to Earth as a Female. And it is 100 pages of in-depth primary research done by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and others. Hank has traveled to China to do research for this particular group, and it has more than 4 million followers worldwide. It's very important that you know about this group and also see just the kind of in-depth primary research that we do here at the Christian Research Journal and the Christian Research Institute. So to get this very special issue, please partner with us. You have been getting the Christian Research Journal for free for the last 2 years, but we would ask for a partnering donation for you to get this very special issue mailed right to your door. And you can do that by going to equip.org. And if you go to the front page and you scroll down a little bit, you will see a section there that features four gifts or opportunities to donate to the Christian Research Institute. And you can see the cover there of the Christian Research Journal. Just click on that and it'll take you right to the landing page where you can give a partnering gift to receive this very special collector's edition print issue. And so thank you for the ways that you partner with us by partnering with us through getting this special print edition and just by telling a friend and letting people know about this podcast. We are so grateful for your comments on Apple Podcasts about the podcast and your input. And we just are really thankful that you listen to us faithfully and you post these episodes on your social media accounts and every other way that you partner with us. So thank you so much. And now back to my conversation with Dr. John Bloom. I want to ask you a little bit more about Walton's interpretation of Genesis, because a couple of things. First of all, you commented about them seeking order. Well, I mean, God is the one who gave them the cultural mandate and said, go fill the earth. I mean, he was telling them to make a society. So I find that's really fascinating that's something that God had given to them, asked them to do, Adam and Eve. And the other thing I'm wondering about too is, you know, we see the seed of the gospel in Genesis chapter 3 after the fall. So my question is, why would he get rid of Adam and Eve? What is the benefit of saying these are not historical people? First of all, how does he skip over the seed of the gospel in Genesis chapter 3? And then also, how does he think sin entered into the world, that we need the gospel?
Yeah, good questions. He dismisses that Genesis 3, you know, the serpent will strike his heel and he'll crush the seed of the woman, will crush the head. He dismisses that as, you know, that's not a messianic prophecy at all. I think it's a pretty striking one myself in that regard. But in terms of where sin comes in, I didn't see him clearly address that. It seems in his thinking that I guess people were always sort of, you know, self-seeking and selfish and, you know, wanting to do their own thing. So, yeah, that was, again, I didn't see him clearly do that. That the benefit of getting rid of Adam and Eve for him is, again, this advances in the scientific discussion. If there was no Adam and Eve, if there was no initial, you know, very good state that people were in, then this removes any biblical challenge to, you know, the secular human origin story to Darwinism, and, you know, people evolved from some pre-existing hominid and some pre-existing whatever. It just sort of clears away any biblical challenge to that secular model. So again, the subtitle there, Advances in the Origin Debate, to me felt a bit of a, you know, advertisement or something. Because for Walton, in this model, the debate's over. Okay, there's nothing in early Genesis that relates to science. And he said that earlier in The Lost World of Genesis 1 and Adam and Eve. But here he's, you know, by doing away with Adam and Eve, you know, and their only typological characters, story characters or something to help explain the human search for order. There's just nothing in Genesis that relates to science. So this is perfect because now science has all the facts, right? In terms of, you know, how we got here and all of that. And, you know, all that the Bible can contribute are, you know, do you want fries with that, I guess? You know, it just could contribute a sense of values, you know. So Walton is catering to the classic fact-value split where, you know, yeah, science has all the facts. And, you know, Christianity can contribute maybe a moral sense of how we should live, contribute, you know, that we should love one another, those sorts of things, you know, the Christianity can contribute. But it has, you know, there's no facts in the Bible that could contest anything that science might bring up. So, and this tends to be, you know, what BioLogos likes to argue as well. So again, he's thinking in that mold, unfortunately. And for me, yeah, you know, the early Israelites, early Genesis, was written at a time before there was anything we would identify as the hard sciences, right? Physics, chemistry, you know, hard math, and all of that. But I think God can still convey a, you know, basic sequence of events as how he created and formed and shaped the earth. And he can convey that sequence of events in a timeless, culturally universal language of appearance style that anybody, you know, from child to astrophysicist, can understand the basic sequence, and scientists today can make good sense of. Coming at this from a scientific side, I see there's pretty nice sequence of events that's laid out there in Genesis that fits how we see the world came to be.
Now, if Walton gets rid of Adam and Eve, how does he explain Jesus himself referring to Adam and Eve as actual people, and also the Apostle Paul referring to Adam as well, and that Jesus is a better Adam in 1 Corinthians 15? I mean, how does he explain those, or does he ignore those passages?
Well, he doesn't exactly ignore them, but he basically says that, well, Paul's arguing in the context of the traditions that the people of his day accepted. So he brings up Adam like we might bring up King Arthur or something like that. So he views Adam and Eve as sort of literary figures or typological figures that Paul appeals to. I don't remember him explicitly mentioning Jesus per se. He probably did, but he mainly focuses, the passage that stuck out to me anyhow was one where he says, well, Paul just was, you know, whether Paul thought Adam was historical or not doesn't matter. And I'm like, well, man, what happened to inspiration? if what Paul thought doesn't matter. And beyond Paul, there's all the nuances about a return to the garden that show up in the book of Revelation as well. So you not only have Jesus directly referencing Adam and Eve, Paul directly referencing Adam and Eve as well in other passages, but just this whole picture from the Apostle John in the book of Revelation of kind of the new heavens and new earth is, in a sense, is a return to the garden, to garden themes. So, And this is what blew me away, is like, you know, if people are not comfortable in the divine realm, if that's his thesis, okay, if being in the divine realm is not a desirable state of human existence, that's a quote from the book, okay, being in the divine realm is not a desirable state of human existence, then whatever happened to heaven? I mean, I don't think he thought through the impact of this, of his, the views he's espousing here on where we go after we die, you know, and what our future is going to be. You know, we're going to dwell with God. God's promised to dwell with us. And, well, just this, we're not comfortable. So there's a lot of incoherent implications in the approach Walton's taking here that to me just, you know, seem to be wrong. I'm sorry, you know. And what I'm reminded of here is from my physics background, there's some famous stories about the physicist Wolfgang Pauli, who's very famous in quantum mechanics and the theoretical world. And Pauli was asked to read a paper. A colleague asked him to read a paper and you know, and tell him what he thought about it. So Pauli reads the paper, and Pauli comes back to him and says, "This guy's not even wrong." Okay. And that's sort of stuck around as an idiom in the physics world. But this is what I kind of felt Walton was doing here. He argues for something that doesn't make sense in the overall picture of Christian theology. Let alone, oh, there's no fall or something like that. But there's just the whole Christian message of, you know, look, Christ came to redeem us so that we could dwell with God. And if he's starting out with, well, you know, just it's just not a desirable place for people to be from the beginning by getting rid of a fall and so on, there's just a lot of incoherence here in his view.
And also, just not the book of Genesis, but, you know, I mentioned Jesus mentioning Adam, and you said, well, he's saying that it's like King Arthur when Paul mentions him. But in the Gospel of Luke, when, you know, he talks about the genealogy of Jesus and he traces back real people, he goes all the way back to the son of Adam, you know, the son of Seth, the son of Adam, the son of God. So I just kind of feel like I don't think Luke would have put in Adam there as he talks about actual real people in biblical history that existed. And of course, I'm assuming that Walton believes Jesus was a real person.
That, I hope so, yeah.
That, you know, we wouldn't have the, well, I think people could say that we don't necessarily have an evangelical view of the gospel because Jesus was a real person. But I mean, that's, you know, we know that Jesus existed, and to go all the way back to say, well, okay, these were all the way, you know, people up to maybe Seth, but then Luke was wrong. That just seems very contrary to Christian orthodoxy since the very beginning, since the New Testament, even before that, since the Old Testament. So what's the broader impact of Walton's approach? Because I don't want people to start doubting based on what Walton is saying that, well, maybe there wasn't Adam and Eve. And so what is the impact of this view that he has?
Well, I think the disturbing thing to me is, and I should probably comment, you know, Walton doesn't shake his fist and say, we now know that there was no Adam and Eve, historical Adam and Eve. He's more circumspect and says, well, whether they existed or not doesn't matter. And their only use in the Bible is in a typological way or as a literary way, as illustrative of the first people or something like that. So he's not as radical as to totally dismiss a historical Adam and Eve, but again, he would say they don't matter. Again, to me, the broader impact of Walton's approach is to really sort of question, you know, what aspect of the Bible should we consider inspired? Or as he would say it, you know, what aspects of the Bible should we consider authoritative? He's really undermined a lot of aspects of scripture here that could be problematic. You know, if view, whatever the Apostle Paul thought about Adam doesn't matter, then, you know, if Paul's writings is just a product of his own traditions, that's, again, that's a pretty serious undermining of Paul's authority and so on. So, yeah, I think the broader implications of his approach are to really undermine much more of Scripture than maybe I'd like to think maybe even Walton himself would want to accept.
One of the things that we do at the Christian Research Journal when we provide a critique of a book, we never say that a book is 100% all good and it's 100% all bad. I mean, we think that there's something that someone has to offer. Is there any good points that Walton has at all in this whole series or in this book in particular?
Well, yeah, I think there's a couple of things that I found helpful. Back in the lost world of Genesis 1, he spent a lot of time arguing for that bara, and you know, the Hebrew word bara for create, and the whole thing that God was doing in Genesis 1 was assigning functions to the sky, to the sea, to the animals, and things like that. God wasn't really creating things. He was just assigning function to things. He got a lot of criticism for that. And in this book, he says, yeah, I think a better way to think about what God was doing in Genesis 1 was ordering the creation. That it started out in, again, tohu wabohu, kind of a formless and void state, and God's ordering it. That's much more in line with what other Old Testament scholars think now. So it's nice to see him kind of set aside this kind of idiosyncratic idea and align himself a little bit more with, you know, God's ordering his creation. And a creationist can see ordering as, you know, God creating things here. So it somewhat fits with a even very conservative models to think that way. He also argued in the Lost World of Genesis 1 that the garden was a cosmic temple, and Adam and Eve were the first priests in that temple. And once again there, he's toned that down and said, no, it's better to think of the garden as this divine realm into which Adam and Eve, you know, they lived there, but it wasn't like as priests, and the garden wasn't a temple. So again, he got some very good criticism from other scholars, so he's revised his views there. So in one sense, the value of new explorations is to see where he himself has changed his views. So I don't have to go now and try to argue against what he said in Lost World of Genesis 1, because he no longer holds that position. So that's been helpful to see. He's refined his positions in some ways so that they're less controversial. And that, I think, is a good thing.
So besides some of the things that you mentioned that you had issues with in this book, were there any other things that you haven't already talked about, from especially the idea of being uncomfortable in the presence of God and heaven and seeing Adam and Eve as irrelevant and interpreting away the fall? Are there other issues that you had with this particular book?
Well, there were a number of ones. How long do you have? It'd be one way to say it. But one of the issues to me that's been interesting to see is that in his prior books, he, again, has this aversion to any form of material creation. Again, trying to separate science from Genesis at all costs is his approach here. So he says, you know, there's nothing about material creation here. In particular, he argues that Genesis 2:7, you know, which is referring to Adam being created from the dust of the ground, that that's not referring to the material creation of Adam. And his big argument there was that there's no preposition in the Genesis 2:7. So it doesn't literally say God created Adam from the dust of the ground. Just God created Adam, dust of the ground, and then breathed into him. So there's no from, So therefore, Genesis 2:7 doesn't connect to a material creation of Adam. Well, you can get into the Hebrew grammar on this, and Hebrew verbs don't always need to have a preposition to, you know, say what something was made from. So that's one argument for it. But to me, what was fun in reading this, as he's spending a couple pages arguing that, no, Genesis 2:7 really is not referring to the material creation of Adam. He's still arguing that point really hard and in detail. If you just read on into the next chapter, Genesis 3:19 and Genesis 3:23 says that Adam came from the dust of the ground. The preposition from is used there. So he focuses on Genesis 2:7 and misses later verses that tell you that provide the preposition, right? That no, God did make Adam materially from the dust of the ground. I would understand dust as non-living material, okay? So that to me was one of the issues is, yes, he changes his position in a number of ways, but he still at all costs wants to avoid any sense of, you know, material creation. Again, because we have to separate science from the Bible, right? So he still continues that position. Overall, I guess the issue I see with Walton is, you know, oh, no real Adam and Eve. You know, Paul was just a product of his traditions. Those sort of approaches are what I read in the theologically liberal, the critical scholars, the skeptics, and so on. You know, it's not that I've ever heard of these positions before or never read them before, but these are coming from an evangelical professor, right? So the striking thing to me with this is he's just appropriated and espoused theologically liberal, critical, and skeptical views and is saying this is the way that conservative Christians should understand the Bible. And it's like, wow, I think there's some problems with that.
So overall, what did you think about Walton's newest entry into his Lost World series?
Well, again, my overall impression was that his goal remains the same, is to any argument I can give that will disconnect the Bible from science is the approach that I'll take. But overall, starting from sort of his first book to his this most recent New Explorations, I'm very disappointed to see sort of this drift from conservative positions. You know, the trend was there before, but here, especially in New Explorations, I kind of see it the most clearly. And to me, what it reminds me of is, and this is kind of sad, I guess, in the aviation world, you know, pilots flying planes, there's what's referred to as a graveyard spiral. And this happens when a pilot flies into clouds and loses all visible connection with the ground because they're in thick clouds. And they try flying by the seat of their pants rather than looking at their instruments. Because your sense of orientation, if your eyes are not able to see the ground, goes off of your inner ear. And you can get yourself into a spiral and feel like you're flying straight. And the graveyard spiral is exactly that. You think you're flying straight. You're going by the seat of your pants or by your inner ear. And you keep flying in a tighter and tighter spiral till you eventually crash. And it just seems like that's what Walton's sort of done here. He's, I hate to say it this way, kind of flying by the seat of his pants. Here's the goal that I want to do, right? Disconnect the Bible from science. And whatever argument I can use that'll forward that goal will do. And he ends up getting into a tighter and tighter critical, skeptical spiral until I think he's crashed the plane. So sadly, and I kind of hate to say that, but that's sort of my overall impression is I don't think he's realized the spiral that he's in by espousing these views. They really seem to be incoherent in the greater picture of Christian theology.
Well, this is just a lot of food for thought. So I'm sure some of our listeners are saying, you know, you're giving a good warning about this series. I probably don't want to read the Lost World series, but do you have different resources for Christians who want to dig into the whole issue of Adam and Eve and their existence and some of the other questions they may have about Genesis?
Yeah, I mean, early Genesis, Adam and Eve is those are really hot topics. Christians need to be thinking about them. And the author I think I like the best on this is Jack Collins, or as he publishes, it's C. John Collins. You can Google him or look on Amazon. Collins has a number of books on this that are great. One of his is Did Adam and Eve Really Exist? You know, Why It Matters. So that book exactly focuses on this issue. He has another book that's really good called Reading Genesis Well, where he looks at the literary depth and the genres that are involved, especially in early Genesis, does an excellent job on that. He's written a commentary on Genesis 1 through 4 that's excellent as well. So, you know, if you want to pick one author, Jack Collins is particularly good for that. If you want to kind of step back and get a broader picture of what's going on and what are the different views that are out there, the Zondervan's Four Views books, there's one on the historical Adam, where Walton is one of the contributors. Jack Collins is one of the other contributors, so you can see them interact with each other there. So the Four Views on the historical Adam. Then there's the Four Views on Creation, Evolution, and Intelligent Design that looks at the kind of the broader issues involved. But there you have the Discovery Institute, you have Hugh Ross, you have BioLogos, and so on, and Answers in Genesis there. So if you really want to get an overview of what people think and why they think it, those two books are really good. I kind of like Hugh Ross. And he's coming out with a new edition of Navigating Genesis this fall that should be helpful. I haven't seen it yet, but I would expect that to be helpful. William Lane Craig has written on the quest for the historical Adam, and he has an excellent chapter, I believe it's chapter 7, where he argues vehemently and very well for the necessity for a historical Adam. The theological issues involved if Adam was not historical. And so that chapter is particularly excellent. He has another chapter there, chapter 6, where he argues against the type of interpretation of Genesis and of ancient Near Eastern materials that Walton does that leads to weird conclusions. So his chapters 6 and 7 are especially good. Overall, I think Craig is a bit weak on some of the human origins data. I think he maybe overrates the Neanderthal abilities and so on. But for the theological aspect, he's great. And for the misinterpretation of texts, both Genesis and ancient Near Eastern, he does a good job. And then unfortunately, I think he kind of falls prey to some of the things that he warns against himself with fantastic elements. You know, I can't believe Genesis because of the fantastic elements that are there. Well, yeah. So, but those again are some good resources, I think, for people that want to explore this more. Collins, the Four Views series, Navigating Genesis, and then sections of the quest for the historical Adam. It would be really great for people to be aware of.
And I will let our listeners know that we have footnoted the review that we did of William Lane Craig's book, The Quest for a Historical Adam, as well as I did a podcast with Fuzz Rana from Reasons to Believe that you can also listen to as well if you missed that a couple of years ago, and add that to your reading list along with the ones that have been recommended here by John. Well, you've given us a lot of food for thought, but now you're a first-time guest on our podcast, so I have some fun rapid-fire questions for you, John. Early bird or night owl?
Night owl.
Introvert or extrovert?
Oh, that's terrible. I'm an extroverted introvert.
Okay, well,
I would say
that is your answer. And you live in California. What's one of your favorite things about living in California?
Well, I'm in Southern California, so the climate here is totally awesome. And the problem is there's too many other people that think the same thing. So it's way overcrowded for the environment here.
Well, thanks, John, for being a guest today on the Postmodern Realities podcast. You've been listening to episode 459 of the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest was Dr. John Bloom. He has written a summary critique book review for the Christian Research Journal, and his review is called The Graveyard Spiral of Walton's New Explorations in the Lost World of Genesis. You can read it for free at equip.org. There's no paywall. Go to equip.org. You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Handegraff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged. Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. It was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.